Okay, so I foolishly signed up to give a whirlwind tour of half-empty glasses. Well, you know, I'm optimistic. I think we've made some progress in the last few years, some progress at least, in white dwarf binaries. So I'll talk about some of the uncertainties and everything that Tomek very nicely just summarized. So it's important to remember, oftentimes, especially when we're doing press releases or even just when we're talking to each other, we think of the common envelope phase as this one big monolithic thing, and that's not true, right? It's a complex, multi-step process. Each of these steps operates on different timescales. We're going to hear a lot more about most of these in the next session. In the next talk. In population synthesis, we want to skim over all of this. We can't do 3D hydro for a million binaries. So what do we do? Well, first of all, let's pretend that nothing happens in post-common envelope evolution. Let's ignore the fact that in a lot of simulations we see a circumbinary ring of material left over. That's really kind of scary. what about the initial dynamical runaway, right? Let's assume that we have some understanding of the response of the donor star. All of this we're going to just treat with a simple parameterization in terms of conservation of energy, hoping that we understand all of that it really is just the orbital energy, and things like, say, recombination emission aren't contributing to expelling the envelope. So we've heard people talk about tuning parameters and trying to you know, explore the space and figure out, okay, well, where are islands where we produce model universes that kind of make sense? And generally, we think of these two guys as your tunable parameters. Alpha, parameterizing the efficiency, as we heard about, and lambda, you know, sort of crudely parameterizing the binding energy of the envelope. But as we've just sort of discussed extensively, sort of preempting a chunk of my talk, we also aren't certain in really what the core, where the core mass ends and the envelope mass begins. Right, so traditionally, we've always sort of, up until maybe a few years ago, alpha, lambda are always grouped together. Even right up to the big simulations for Tassos Fragos. Unfortunately, he started his calculations just as fits for lambda were starting to come out. He and collaborators found that you needed to have alpha lambda values generally on the order of 0.1 or less if you're going to match things like the observed distribution of low mass X-ray binaries. How meaningful that actually is sort of iffy, because we know that alpha lambda can't be a constant. At the very least, lambda is not a constant. Where we can actually get the stellar structure right, we definitely see that it varies by 1 to 2 orders of magnitude. Now, for, say, Star Trek simulations, you generally use, and modern population synthesis calculations, generally use some sort of fitting parameter for lambda. But as we discussed, those fits don't go up to massive stars. The Nanjing model that Star Trek uses only goes up to 20 solar masses. Above that, we just assume, or they just assume, lambda of 0.1, which is probably right within a factor of a few, but a factor of a few here, a factor of a few there, a factor of a few there, starts to get a little worrying. You start to see how we get a range in predicted rates from 9 to 240. Trying to model. That's measured. Yes, it's about 1,000. Yes. Well, I mean, we know that Hertzsprung gap donors aren't going to go into a common envelope, so we don't have the. Well, if you talk to Natasha Ivanova, she would say so. If you actually put a Hertzsprung gap donor in Meza, you try to actually run the stellar evolution, you don't see a runaway. And on a Hertzsprung gap, how are you going to really? What's the core? What's the envelope? Sure, but then what do you actually define as your final remnant, right? Like, it's a very ambiguous problem.
Well, I mean, I can say I've yes. Problem and you get delay common envelope.
Right, what do you get as your remnant? What do you get as your remnant? You don't know. Yeah. Right, and you're not going to find out in a 1D code, probably. It's an issue. Trying to understand the formation of white dwarf binaries, because there's a lot more of them. Zerodovich and collaborators, they found values of alpha generally clustering around the lower end, less than 0.3. This makes sense. I mean, an alpha of 1 assumes perfect fine tuning, right? If you have an efficiency of 1, that means everything, all of the matter that you unbind is leaving with the with exactly the escape velocity of the system. I don't think that's terribly likely. Is anybody in the room? So an alpha of 1, as you use in Star Trek, not so likely. We've already come up with brought up this question: should alpha even be constant? Probably not. Certainly, if you want to invoke things like, say, recombination emission, if that's helping to drive the emission, then that depends on how expanded the envelope is. It depends on the evolutionary state of the donor, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, we also have, this is for a 20 solar mass donor. This is a slice from 5.5 to 8.5 solar masses. Different definitions for what you actually call the core boundary that have all been used in the literature. Here's lambda with just the gravitational term and with the inclusion of the internal energy. So you see, you definitely have, first of all, you have a difference in three solar masses in what actually your final remnant is going to be. And it also definitely matters for what lambda is the appropriate value. Yeah? Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, so we heard about the gamma formalism. So I'm just skimming over since we talked about core mass boundary definitions a bit. So Nelemans et al., invoking Paczynski and Zelkowski's studies from the 60s, they suggested, okay, well, you know, we haven't gotten anywhere in 20, 30 years trying to get... trying to understand things in terms of parameterizing based on energy conservation. Let's look at orbital angular momentum instead, right? The main motivation for this is if you actually try to fit double white dwarf binaries and single white dwarf binaries, here's a whole big long list of white dwarf binaries. You could work backwards, because for low-mass giants, it's very convenient that there's a very nice relation between the core mass and the radius of the giant. This means you can infer what the orbital separation, assuming it's Roche-Loeb overflowing, was before the common envelope. So you can actually work backward. And what they found is that generally you get a huge spread in alpha lambdas, generally implying, well, given what we know about lambda, that now that you need alpha values greater than 1, there must be some, it looks like there's some other contribution to the energy. Whereas they found generally that you could explain most binaries with a fairly narrow range in gammas. However, that didn't give us any kind of actual explanation as to what this was supposed to be. Just they found a parameterization that seemed to fit. What physically does this mean? Well, in most cases, it meant you actually had a widening of the orbit. How do you widen an orbit in a common envelope? Well, the consensus answer now, I think, is that you don't. If you actually try to run simulations of these binaries in something like MESA or STARRS EV, its predecessor, what you get is you don't find a runaway to unstable mass transfer for the expected donors. Generally, you find stable mass transfer in the first phase of mass loss when the initial primary overflows its Roche-Loeb. And only then, when the initial secondary, the companion, overflows its Roche-Loeb with a much reversed mass ratio, do you actually get a common envelope phase.
This is just saying, what was that earlier, near mass ratio of 1?
Yeah, but the point is, why did we get this wrong before? So just to summarize here, there doesn't seem to be any need for the gamma formalism in its original context. The problem that it was devised to solve, which was very specific to double white dwarfs, doesn't call for it. And there's some nitty-gritty that I won't get into because I only have a couple minutes, that if you actually try to if you compare fitting with alphas, fitting with gammas, the reason you get a narrow range of gammas is because you can fit anything from wide expansion to merger with a range of gammas from 1.5 to 1.75, right? You can do anything. Right, so why did we get this so wrong? Well, that's because this was happening about 10 years ago. These models were starting to be performed 15 years ago. And generally, to evaluate whether mass transfer was going to be unstable or not, all population synthesis codes, or most, were using something like the Helming and Webbing criteria, which was basically treating all giant stars as polytropes, with a discontinuity at the center. They have a core mass. And basically, we knew for years, if you compare it with actual detailed calculations, that giant branch stars did not seem to behave this way. If you actually try and pull off 10 to the negative 6, 10 to the negative 5 solar masses per year off of a giant branch star of one or two solar masses, you don't see the dramatic expansion that you would expect in this case. Basically, what's happening is if you assume it's a polytrope of index 1.5, what you're assuming is that you're actually pulling directly off of the convective interior, right? In which case, well, okay, convection wants to force a flat entropy profile. If you pull mass off, it's going to need to expand in order to maintain that. And so that's how you get this, as Tomek said, this rapid runaway well beyond pulling mass off pushes it further and further outside of its Roche radius. Sorry? Because a real star is not a polytrope, is the simple answer. Real giants have a super adiabatic layer at its surface, right? Convection becomes very inefficient when the density, as the density falls. Radiative losses dominate, and you get this thin, cool blanket where that flat entropy profile drops off. This becomes very dramatic for even more for more massive stars. Most
that's also the part of the star that I wouldn't trust.
Exactly. So that's pretty much the punchline of this slide, is that this is the most important part in treating rapid mass loss, and this is the part that we don't entirely trust what's actually happening in something like MESA. So that's a serious problem. Really, what's happening is you're transitioning from a problem that can be well done in 1D to something that you need 3D hydro for, right? And there's no easy way to patch between the two. So how do you actually, just to round that out and to raise one more concern, how do you actually decide when a common envelope happens if you can't just assume they behave as polytropes? One way is to try and make, say, some cutoff in the accretion rate, right? And you can compare with what the response of the companion would be. Is it going to overflow its Roche lobe? Are you going to get a common envelope that way? So here I've shown, this is for just another white dwarf binary case. This is a one solar mass giant with a 0.8 solar mass companion. The mass transfer rate as a function of the donor mass, so time runs this way, for three different cases. Using MESA, that's in blue, using IBIS, Levi-Jungelsen's code, that's in green, and using red, that's BSE. Completely different answers. That's scary. None of them are 3D. Actually, well, blue is 1D, and the other two are just prescriptions. They're just equations. They're just simple prescriptions.
Yeah, so that's what I understand. I thought it's numerical estimates in the little industry. You can bash things in, and you get
computer. There are no 3D stellar models.
There are no 3D stellar models of this sort of thing. It's a tough problem. Yeah.
The point is, doing 3D stars is beyond, through this life of the star, is beyond what's going to happen.
But it's not that's kind of
not what Shree is asking for. He's asking for a targeted calculation.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. I still have some point.
That is a. I think we're fine.
Yeah.
But doing the non-adiabatic outer layers of the star.
Yeah.
That's really critical.
On the last burning stage.
Yeah.
It's easier if they're nearly, the convection is rapid, and so silicon burning, oxygen burning, you can do those phases. It gets a lot harder when you're trying to do a numerical calculation where it's
very specific thing. We understand the final, the end state. Mm-hmm. Right? Or, not a white box. We're just asking, can we not numerically compute what happens if we take matter of a red giant, which is a cold? Why is this difficult? Why is this not doable today?
It's being done.
Because it depends on the outer convection layers, radiative transport, layer in the interaction with the wind, which comes off from dust.
I completely agree with Sri. We're doing global radiation IG simulations of accretion flows on the black holes, and we have all of that stuff in there with real opacities and everything. What the hell?
We need to look at the other end. We need to peel mass off of stars and see.
Simple calculation of just stripping a red giant off the world, is that really that hard?
You have to tell me the opacity of the red giant on the world, with the dust in it.
Clearly, we need another KITV workshop on this specific topic.
Yes.
Comment is, so we worry about all these errors, but remember when he showed the range of lambda, so alpha lambda ranging by a factor of 1,000, it changed the black hole merger rate by a factor of 50, right? So that factor of 1,000 uncertainty in alpha times lambda, effectively, is a factor of 50 in the rate. So that tells you how it is important. If we want to get better in factor of 50, we have to do it. But it's not, even though we don't, I mean, that was effectively saying we don't know anything, and even without knowing anything, the rate doesn't vary by 10 orders of magnitude.
By more than the uncertainty.
Yes.
that's.
But that uncertainty is going to go down.
The rate is going to go down. We have a lot of work to get, a lot of work to, you want to fix this, but the point that population synthesis has shown us is that it's not exponential. It's not that the error is...
No, but the point, just to sort of skim over to the end here, is that the lesson, there's an important lesson here from white dwarf binaries, one more, which is anybody who tells you that, okay, well, we're just going to run a grid of population synthesis models, play with tunable parameters, and eventually we'll nail down exactly what area of parameter space is important. I ask those people, all right, tell me what the progenitor of a type 1a supernova is. It's...
Can I this issue about giants and stability of mass transfer in giants, is this actually the critical common envelope phase for binary neutron star, binary black holes? I mean, is it the...
It's one of the two critical phases for the standard model.
Okay.
The two critical
phases for the standard model. Exactly.
The reason it's important is less clear about the black hole and neutron star. They're exotic and interesting.
Yes.
I think a larger problem for the rates are not the giant donors, but the virtual gap donors. So this is the time when the star expands a lot, it has a radiative envelope. If it's a convective envelope, we can discuss all this, but it's likely to be unstable, and we're pretty safe in that regime. But if it's a radiative envelope, it's likely to be unstable. It's likely to be stable there, but the secondary can expand, material can be flung out of the outer Lagrange point, bringing the stars together. And so this is the area where we can have a large number of progenitors, 4-0, and I think this is the part that is having a much bigger effect on the rates than factor 50, am I right?
Well, so Chris did modify that. He said, I can accept the Hirschsprung ones or not for really massive stars building on that paper. And there it made a big difference, So that can make a huge difference.
And that doesn't even talk about the uncertainties because it doesn't vary how much is actually ending on this other side. It just kicks them completely out or not. It's 2 points in the multi-dimensional ground space.
So I think when he varied this, it was less important for if you're talking about 30 solar masses. It was more important when we were trying to do the varied masses. But we did do that study. We said, I'm going to say it either survives or doesn't survive.
So for the black holes, they should come from pretty massive progenitors, and they try to expand, but they always have winds, right? So they don't even make it to this convective state. So for the most massive stars, it's only this Hirschsprung gap phase. That's the dominating type of mass transfer that would lead the system to
Oh, no, you don't know. Which one are you plugged into? Three.
Is that any idea?
working. Is it three?
Well, that was the table.
Yeah.
Okay. So now
I'm not certainly not going to solve it, but I'm going to try to simplify a few aspects of the problem.